Doing a sound check. Can you hear me at the back? More up. It's good. Thank you. The Buddha often used the image of water in his metaphors, in his teachings. And that image of water has come to me right now. That image of going against the current, just imagining a river, the current of a river, and going against the current in this path to awakening. And he said, I teach only one thing, suffering and the end of suffering. And he framed these teachings using a framework of the Four Noble Truths, which came to be the most central of his teachings. There is the truth of stress and suffering, the truth of the origination of stress, the truth of the cessation of stress, and the truth of the path to the cessation of stress. And each of these truths, noble truths, entails a duty. Stress is to be comprehended, the origination of stress to be abandoned, the cessation of stress realized, and the path to the cessation of stress developed. When all of these duties have been duly performed, the mind gains total release. So this is where we're heading. We want to see clearly the causes of our suffering. We want to understand them and uproot those causes. But in our lives of practice, and as you may have noticed, also on retreat, we sit to meditate, and there's difficulties, there's obstacles that obstruct our capacity to be mindful, to be present, to see clearly what's happening. Those obstacles, they cloud our minds and close our hearts. They really hinder our movement towards more freedom of heart and mind. And of all these difficulties that we may encounter on our path, the Buddha singled out five qualities that he described at length and multiple times. And these are the five hindrances: craving for sense pleasures or sense desire, the movement of wanting something pleasurable to the senses. Aversion or ill will, wanting to get rid of, the mind caught up in negativity. Sloth and torpor, sleepiness, drowsiness, heaviness of the mind. Restlessness and worry, the mind and body that are agitated, worried and lost in thought. And the fifth one, doubt, the mind that is paralyzed with skeptical doubt. So the Buddha described the effects of the hindrances in this way. and one of the ways that he describes them. These are the five obstacles, hindrances that overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment. And when a monk or a practitioner has not abandoned these five obstacles, hindrances that overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment, when he's without strength and weak in discernment, for him to understand what is for his own benefit, what is for the benefit of others, or for the benefit of both, to realize a superior human state, a truly noble distinction in knowledge and vision, that is impossible. That is the effect of the hindrances. That is the power of the hindrances in our path. And the hindrances can arise anytime. And no matter what practice we're doing, whether we're attending to the breath, to the body posture, in walking meditation, in the in-betweens. And they actually arise in everyday life. It's not that all of a sudden we come here on retreat and we sit to meditate and they come here for the first time. It's just that we're noticing them more on retreat. And that's a good thing, because we want to see them more. We want to shed light on the hindrances. This morning, as Greg was preparing us to take off our masks, if we wish to, I started to become aware of all these things I was doing behind the mask. I was like, all these yawning and face expressions. Everything was happening behind the mask. And just becoming aware, wow, all of this that was hidden by the masks. So we want to shed light into these hidden parts of our practice. And we want to understand the hindrance so we can free ourselves. In the Satipatthana Sutta that a guy mentioned last night, the hindrances are part of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. It's when a practitioner who has sensual desire and all of the other hindrances in them understands, I have sensual desire in me. When they don't have sensual desire in them, they understand, I don't have sensual desire in me. They understand how sensual desire arises, how when it's already arisen, it's abandoned, and how, once it's abandoned, it doesn't arise again in the future. So there is a great encouragement in these teachings of the Buddha to free ourselves and to find ways to free ourselves from these hindrances so they don't arise. So there's ways in which these hindrances are fed and ways in which they are starved. So how do we work with these hindrances? And I'll be offering some suggestions, both how to work with these hindrances individually, specifically, and also in more general terms. So the first one is sense desire or craving for sense pleasures. It is this movement of the mind towards something that is not pleasant and that the mind perceives as giving us the potential, having the potential to give us lasting satisfaction of being pleasant. It sometimes arises disguised as a need. I really need this cookie. We had cookies at lunch. I absolutely need this cookie in order to meditate. And on the surface, sense desire seems pleasant. But if we tune in to the felt sense in the body, in the mind, we realize that actually it's a state of suffering. It's a state of suffering. When sense desire is present, there is a sense of lack, of not having enough. There is discontentment, and there is a disconnection with the present moment experience. So it's important to notice, to recognize it, noticing that agitation in the mind that is strategizing. How can I get a second cookie without anyone noticing? That leaning towards the lunch queue and trying to be the first one. So this is bringing mindful recognition, noticing its manifestation, and that in itself will already take away the power of the hindrance of desire. So we're no longer under its spell. So recognizing, bringing the attention to the body, how does it feel? Is it happy? And really noticing with desire, with sense desire, there is a contraction in the body. Sense desire is really fed by unwise attention. Unwise attention to the beautiful aspects of the object. So I don't know if you have noticed, you might have not know that you needed or that you wanted a cookie until you saw a cookie. So there is really that sense of unwise attention. So there is that aspect of recognizing, feeling it, and not acting on it, being aware of it, and seeing it pass away, seeing it diminishing and fade away. But sometimes we can also allow ourselves to go with the desire and take that extra cookie and become aware of how it feels to get it, bringing mindfulness to the whole process. I remember many years ago, I was here on a 3-month retreat and there were chocolate brownies. And I love chocolate, and I took one chocolate brownie, one portion, and I sat down to eat it. And after 2 bites, I started to think, how am I going to get the second portion? Needless to say, I didn't enjoy the rest of the chocolate brownie. I was just lost in the thinking strategy. How am I going to get that second brownie? So I finished that brownie, went in a certain way, found my way to the brownies. There was still one left, and I took it. But I had a bite, and actually, it wasn't that satisfying. I really didn't want to have the second brownie. So I wrapped it up, and I kept it in the fridge so I could have more brownie the next day. And then I forgot about it. So really important to connect with the whole process, what happens when sense desire is present. So how we are aware is very important, and it's really an invitation for exploration. So not feeling guilty about it, not feeling guilty when the sense desire arises, really taking it as a practice. So there is this sense of lack when sense desire is present. So sometimes it might be helpful to turn to the opposite qualities from lack, like the qualities of appreciation and gratitude. So questioning what is lacking and finding what is already here. What is already here? So sense desire is really supported by views. Views of what might be lacking. So bringing in the opposite might help. Another way in which we might wish to play with sense desire is bringing the intention to reconnect with the object of meditation. Reconnect with the body, reconnect with movement, reconnecting with posture. And one particular way in which craving for sense pleasure might arise outside of retreat, but also on retreat, is with sexual desire. And that's very human. But usually we either get ashamed and repress it, or we get dragged by the fantasy, by the images associated. And when we get pulled by those images, there is a disconnect from the bodily energies that might be present. So it may be helpful at those times to let go of those images, of those fantasies, and bringing the attention to the body. Allowing those energies to flow in the body and not be stuck in one area, like the genital area, but really allowing them to flow through the whole body. So maybe enlarging the attention to have to fill the whole body and feel those energies, how they circulate. And that energy is usually not too far away from energies that are available when concentration deepens, when samadhi deepens. So with mindfulness, there is what we pay attention to and how we pay attention. And as I mentioned, sense desire is sustained by unwise attention. There's usually a fixation on the object, a fixation on the outer object, the object of the desire. And many years ago, also here on a three-month retreat, I became particularly pulled towards and attracted towards another yogi. Everything about that yogi was endearing. They passed by and My attention would just be pulled. And I went on for interview with Joseph Goldstein, and because it was very alive for me and took quite a lot of space of my day, I shared it with him. And he said, well, that's because you're not noticing seeing. You're not noticing seeing. So the next time that yogi passed, instead of letting the attention go out into the object, noticing the seeing. Seeing is happening. Shapes, forms, colors. And the attraction just faded away. So there is the attention to the object, and there is the attention to the beautiful aspects of the object. So there is a kind of one-sided a way of attending. So we can bring in the other side. So we might just notice the outer aspect of the object, and in particular with attraction to someone else, we might want to bring in other aspects of the body which are internal or not so internal, like urine and feces and pus and mucus and blood and flesh, all of that being part of the same object. And that will balance out this energy of desire. You may wish to experiment. Finally, just speaking to this possibility as we continue to deepen in our practice and whatever object of meditation we have, when developing this intimacy with our meditation object, with the breath, for example, as we dwell in mindfulness, starting to feel enjoyment in meditation, finding the delight in the breath. In the longer term, we start to feel nourished by the meditation. And the pleasures of meditation will really take over. We feel nourished by the Dharma, by the Sangha. And then other pleasures will just fade out in comparison. So the other hindrance is aversion. And aversion can take many forms. It can manifest as a little irritability, as anger, as fear, disliking, boredom, which is more subtle, impatience, judgment, blame, depression, grief, sadness, many manifestations of aversion. Really important to be able to name it. This is aversion. And I remember very clearly, also here on a three-month retreat, I was interviewing with Greg, I was having practice meetings with Greg. He was one of my teachers on the three-month retreat, and I was sitting outside, waiting for my practice meeting. And Greg was running late, and it might have been just a few minutes, but for me, it was a long time. So I was sitting there, and just feeling the irritation starting to build. And by the time I went in to see Greg, I was fuming. And Greg said, very softly, very welcomingly, "You don't want to be here. You're feeling aversion." Maybe he used other words. And immediately, right there and then, something relaxed. Something relaxed in the being, just naming, "Ah, this is aversion." And sometimes there is resistance to the present moment. And we don't need to turn that resistance into a problem. That resistance in the present moment, that's the present moment. So we can take that resistance and come into relationship with that quality. And as we come into relationship, we notice that when there is aversion, there is contraction. The consciousness is contracted. The body is contracted. Body and mind. Body reflects the mind. So really helpful to soften the body. Softening the body softens the mind. So bringing in this quality of relaxation that has been mentioned multiple times during the morning meditation instructions, this relaxes the contractedness of aversion. And with aversion, there is usually a story. There is the thinking mind. So dropping the story again and again and again, returning to the body. The story is feeding the aversion. The other quality that is helpful to bring is that of allowing, which is the opposite quality of aversion. Fully welcoming, letting be, allowing, opening up to the experience in the body. So really giving the doing the opposite movement of aversion. Aversion contracts, small space, giving it space. Giving space to the awareness will give space to the mind. And reconnecting, sometimes it's really helpful to have this determination to reconnect with our object of meditation. I remember this story that Joseph Goldstein has told us during a three-month retreat about a time when he was meditating with Sayadaw Pandita in Burma. And the conditions, it was in India. The conditions there were not very pleasant. We were talking about high beds here. They didn't even have beds. They were sleeping on concrete floors. And there was a smell of urine coming from the toilets. Food was terrible. There's all these difficulties. And he tells of going to the interview and telling Sayadaw Upandita about this. And he just said, "Joseph, just be mindful. Just be more mindful." And that he's sharing that as he connected more with this object of meditation, all of that aversion just dropped away. When aversion is persistent, it might be helpful to question it. On retreat, one common manifestation of aversion is in the form of judgment. We dropped most of our connections, relationships when we came here. And there is a certain degree of seclusion being here. There's noble silence. We simplify being on retreat. And yet we find that we're still relating to one another. And sometimes we may notice that we're relating through judging others. Someone is either walking too slowly or breathing too loudly or taking food too slowly in the lunch queue. So really important to recognize when judgment arises and to not judge ourselves. Also important to feel the pain, the suffering of judging. Somewhere along the central axis of the body. Instead of being dragged by these obsessive thoughts. So, can I let go of these thoughts? They're not taking me anywhere, or at least nowhere I want to go, just leading to more suffering. Again, another example from my experience here at IMS. Walking in the walking room, you'll notice there's some lamps in the walking room. Well, it hasn't always been the same lamps. There was one three-month retreat when they decided to change the lamps halfway through the retreat. And there were all these thoughts, why have they changed these lamps? They were fine. In fact, they were even more beautiful, the previous ones. These ones aren't nice at all. It's like, why have they done that? Why have they done that? Why have they done that? Just spinning and spinning and spinning. And I went for interview and I shared this and the teacher just ignored completely my complaints. Just drop it. And that's what I did. So I ask myself the question, did I come here to fix IMS or to get liberated? So really important. Am I building something out of proportion? So normal on retreat, there isn't much entertainment here. So the mind just hangs on to something and just spends long time on that. So might be helpful also to remember that just as we're doing our best here on retreat, others too are doing their best and they are supporting our practice by being here, by practicing, by their commitment to awakening. So bringing this quality of appreciation, of gratitude, will also be helpful to ease the aversion. So rather than focusing on the less attractive aspects of other people when judgment arises, seeing the beautiful, seeing the good in others. When there is aversion, there is suffering. So one quality that might be particularly helpful with aversion is the quality of compassion. Noticing the suffering of aversion in us and bringing that warmth of compassion May I be free from this suffering. May I hold this suffering with compassion. Really helpful in easing the suffering and countering aversion. It really brings in a different quality to the mix. We will soon start offering some metta instructions. And there is, over the long term of practice, a real power in the practice of metta. The quality of friendliness, of loving kindness, starts to percolate the being, and there is less room for aversion to arise. I remember when I was doing a 3-month retreat at Gaia House Meditation Center in the UK, in the southwest of the UK, and I noticed that there was a lot of aversion and judgment developing towards one cook, one of the cooks. There were many things that I disliked. There was exuberance, and they spoke loudly, they laughed a lot. Many things. So one day, so I continued my practice, working with the aversion, going back to the mat, plugging out of the aversion, going back to the mat, and continuing my practice of metta every day. And one day, magically, the cook passed, and there were all these feelings of tenderness and affection and a heartfulness and appreciation for this cook, and just appreciation for how good the food was that they cooked, and their support, their service to the community. It was so big, the friendliness, that it even surprised me how much it was present. And even the things that I found irritating were now endearing. Ah, so much exuberance, so beautiful. So this is the power of metta. This is the power of loving kindness. So we need to understand the workings of aversion, the conditions that allow it to arise, and the conditions that allow it to go, to be abandoned, and for it not to arise. And aversion is particularly important because it can be a sustaining factor for all the hindrances. We don't want the hindrance to be there. So the next hindrance is sloth and torpor, these old English words, which point towards sleepiness, dullness, basically lack of energy, a sense of shutting down from experience, of disconnect from the present moment, from the experience. So how do we distinguish tiredness from this hindrance of sloth and torpor? A clue might be that if you're feeling sleepy during the meditation and the lunch bell goes and all of a sudden you're fully awake and ready to eat and you go to the lunch line, that might be a sign that this was a hindrance and not a tiredness. And the first few days of the retreat, it may be very natural that the accumulation of tiredness from daily life is still there, is still felt, and it might be helpful to take a nap and rest the body, rest the mind. But if it continues, it might be really a sign of low energy. So a sign that we might wish to do something, pick up that energy. So here are some ways in which one might be playful and explore giving more energy to the body and mind. So the body conditions the mind conditions the body, bringing an uprightness, establishing an uprightness to the posture might be very helpful. And we might need to do it repeatedly in a sitting. Uprightness, reaffirming that again and again and again. And in that, we are really giving a direction of wakefulness to the mind. Sometimes opening the eyes might be helpful, letting in light. Or even with the eyes closed, having the perception of light, of sunshine coming through. If we're meditating with the breath, maybe paying more attention to the in-breath, which is more energizing, and really tuning into that energizing quality of the in-breath might bring more energy. And when there is sleepiness, lack of energy, there is also a contraction, less space. So opening up the awareness to the whole body might be helpful, or beyond, also including sounds or the space in the room. So right now we could do an experiment and maybe taking in a sense of the corners in this room and having a sense of the space in the room. So it can be subtle, but really, really helpful when there's sleepiness. Another way we might wish to experiment with is with standing up. So this was one of the five postures that Greg spoke about this morning, alongside with the in-betweening. Standing up, it's very difficult to fall asleep when you're standing up. And I really love seeing people standing up in the hall. It's really a sign that they're working skillfully with the hindrance of sleepiness. And even a moment, even a few moments of bringing that energy sets the mind to wakefulness. And sometimes we might wish to walk, to do a walking period instead of sitting, walk faster, and really taking advantage of this alternating of walking and sitting to balance energy. I don't want you to fall asleep right now, so I'm just checking. Sometimes with sleepiness, there will be laziness, and it might be helpful to reflect again on the preciousness of this moment, of this opportunity to be here on retreat and to practice. So we will want to make good use of our time and not just sleep all the way through the retreat, maybe. Then there is restlessness and worry. agitation in the mind and body. It might be helpful to keep the body still, having determination to stay still but relaxed, relaxing. And usually when there is a restlessness in the body, there is a contraction and imbalance of energy. So really expanding the space of awareness might be helpful for letting all that energy circulate, giving it more space. So paying attention to sound, expanding. And we might wish to pay attention to our effort levels. Maybe there's been too much striving. Don spoke about this soft perseverance, and it's not just a switch, a button that we press, soft perseverance, and we're there for the whole retreat. It's really, we might wish to really play and explore our effort levels. And continuing to care for our ethical conduct. To our practice of sila will keep us free from worry and regret. And the final one is doubt. Skeptical doubt. At one point during the retreat, or even at the beginning of retreat, there might be the thought, what was I thinking when I signed up for this retreat? 3 months of this, or 6 weeks? We may doubt the teachings, we may doubt the teachers, we may doubt what do they know anyway. We may doubt ourselves, our capacity to do the practice. So it's really important to distinguish questioning from skeptical doubt. Questioning usually brings a sense of direction, of inspiration, of passion, and skeptical doubt brings paralysis. I don't know what to do, so I do nothing. So important to recognize doubt. Recognizing it in a sitting, and maybe taking a firm commitment, I'll just finish this sitting, just bringing back the attention, continuing to nourish mindfulness, and maybe making an appointment with yourself for later and keeping that for the questions and really coming back to those questions if they are important. And we may find that many times we'll just forget there were questions. It's just there was the skeptical doubt. And with those doubts, might be helpful to remember the benefits we got so far in the practice, to really strengthen that confidence in the practice and in our capacity to walk this path. So those were the five hindrances, and the rewards of working with the five hindrances are not just that we will have a longer sitting period, a more pleasant sitting period. Working with the hindrances is really taking us closer to awakening. Every step we take in diminishing, in abandoning the hindrances, taking us there. So sometimes we might feel a bit submerged by the hindrance, and there is a little acronym that might be helpful for us to grab in those moments. And that's the acronym of RAIN. And some of you might have already heard about it. R for recognizing, A for allowing, I for interest or investigation, N for nature, non-identification. So recognizing, bringing that mindful recognition, this is aversion. Recognizing it in the mind, recognizing it in the body. It really allows us to come in relationship to the hindrance and begin to skillfully work with them rather than being swept away. So the hindrance really loses its power with recognition. Allowing, this is a quality that we bring to mindful recognition. It's really bringing in another factor, which is the opposite of aversion, which usually comes with a hindrance. So it's not a passive accepting, oh, there's a hindrance. Well, it's really opening up and beginning to understand, to be free. I for interest, we notice how it manifests, become interested in its workings, how it affects our perceptions, how it's fed, how it's starved. But it's not a conceptual digression. We're not thinking about it. Rather, really being close to our experience in an embodied way. And non-identification is really acknowledging that this is a human experience. It's not my sadness or my aversion. We don't have to take it so personally. The Buddha to be had hindrances coming in the personification of Mara that Vance described the other day, even in the night of his enlightenment. So these are manifestations of our humanity. And they won't disappear until full awakening. And I don't know if it's bad news or good news, but that's how it is. So, not a reflection of who we are or how good we are as we meditate, or a reflection of failure or success. So, just very generally, with all these hindrances, there are some aspects that I found important with the exploration. One of them is that, or the first one is that they come, these hindrances come from unwise attention. So, really being particularly attentive to the in-between moments in our day might be helpful. How we're paying attention, and what we pay attention creates the world of our experience. And with all the hindrances, we don't just sit there and do nothing. We're active, we do something, as we've described. It's really important to remember our intention. What do we want to develop? And intentions might slip many times during the day. So really important. Right now, what's my deepest intention for being on retreat, and remembering that. What are my views about what's happening? Can I see the hindrances as an opportunity, not as a mistake, and being open to experiment. It really gives a sense of possibility, and it's hard work, but it is gratifying. There is this image that I like of surfing, something I know really nothing about, but really like the image. In there is a river in Africa that starts in Zambia and crosses Angola, Botswana, and goes down to Mozambique. And that's the Zambezi River. And in Mozambique, it crosses the whole two provinces in Mozambique, including the Zambezia province, until it goes all the way to the Indian Ocean. And Mikey February is a professional surfer from South Africa, and he went to surf the Zambezi wave. At one point, after the Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, there is a point where there is a gorge, it's called the Batoka Gorge, where a wave forms. And that wave is very difficult even to surf, even for professional surfers. And he says this: there was staying on the wave and falling, staying on the wave and falling. I learn what to do when I fall. And the more time I spend in the river and on the wave, the more I learn about it. You get to know the wave, the way it moves, the subtleties. And once you get it, you really enjoy the wave and you enjoy the river and the landscape around the river. Really an image for how we might work and conceive of our work in meditation with the hindrances. And we develop wisdom just as Mikey February develops his capacity to be on the wave and enjoy. So when we're not squandering our energy, when our energy is not pulled away by the hindrances, there is the harmonization of body and mind, the development of samadhi, of tranquility. We come to understand the steadiness of mindfulness, that mindfulness, that steadiness, that samadhi really comes from letting go. Letting go and not being pulled away. Not so much from focusing, but really from softening the heart, opening the heart. I would like to end with a quote from the Buddha. When the mind is not debased by these five impurities, the hindrances, it is pliant, malleable, and luminous. It is not brittle and is rightly concentrated for the ending of the effluence. Let us sit for a moment together. Thank you. So we have a period for walking, and we'll be back at 9. Those who wish to come for chanting and another sitting.